Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 17th, 2014. You're listening to the finest PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Anything new, Scott? It's been a slow week.
No, there's been no news breaking at all.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just gotta reach deep and, like, you know, just dig through and come up with good topics to talk about, and that's just gonna be today's show, just because, I mean, it's not like there's sports teams partnering with online sites or poker personalities facing larceny charges. That stuff just didn't happen this week.
No. We'll see you at the tables.
It's not like anybody's announced more Ante-Up poker tour stops or cruises or anything like that. So,
nah.
We're just going to have to, like, dig deep and find some stuff to talk about.
So, really, I think this is pretty good news, though, about party poker and professional sports teams actually having tie-ins together. I mean, even though it's the small market, and I know we'll explain this a little more, but it's a smallish market that's being used for this. I think it can only help our overall situation. Don't you agree?
Well, yeah, I want to see how this plays out, because when I first heard about, first of all, I guess for people that I haven't heard, the New Jersey Devils and the Philadelphia 76ers, who are part of the same ownership group as PartyPoker.com, they announced this, a more direct tie-in with both teams and Party Poker's new New Jersey online casino, and it's a $10 million deal. It includes a lot more Party Poker integration with both teams' websites, social networks, more in-arena promotion, and you can start to win game tickets and prizes for the Devils.
Wow.
So that's what's going on there. And when I first heard about it, I was immediately taken back, just because I know the lengths that a lot of professional sports leagues,
right,
not necessarily the teams in general, but the leagues go to distance themselves from gambling. I mean, if you look at the NFL, I mean, they are just like anything they can do to not get you to talk about the line on this week's game.
Right.
They will. I mean, to the fact that they don't even let players play in casinos,
right,
in the NFL. So, obviously, this isn't the NFL. This is the NHL and the NBA. So that's what I was most interested in. And it does seem, obviously, the NHL in particular had some concerns about it, so they're working through that. And then, of course, you got to think that, you know, the 76ers aren't actually in New Jersey, so they're limited to what they can actually do there. I mean, folks that want to that come to the 76ers website and want to play a party poker are going to have to cross into New Jersey to do it. So,
right.
So that was the most interesting thing to me, is how this kind of got past the leagues, and I'm sure that was a very interesting set of conversations they had. So now, after that, I guess it's just, if this goes and it works well, and there's no, you know, what these critics, the thuggery and things that they think comes from the gambling that's destroying our society, then yeah, I think it's going to spread, and it makes sense, because, you know, let's be honest, it's one of these things, this is what always killed me at the NFL. You can put your head in the sand and say, oh, gambling's bad, but they're going to be forever intertwined. You can't get away from it. I mean, obviously, it doesn't mean you have to embrace it, let them come in and sit in your living room and, you know, drink your beer, but to actively try to distance yourself from it is fairly ridiculous, I think.
You know, and I'll say a couple of things about your reaction to the pro leagues and gambling. They, if I remember correctly, and I'm fairly certain it was Canadian teams, but they had on their, like, boards on the hockey rinks and stuff, PokerStars advertisements all
sure.
over the place. And they had, like, the casinos are always advertising in all these places, you know, Casino Montreal or whatever they are. So, yeah, I agree with that. I think it's, you know, especially NFL, they're doing that. But also, do you remember, was there a time where it was an NHL player who was involved in a, I think it was like a sit-and-go on TV or something, or it was one of those, you know.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Made for television. Yeah, and then the NHL got kind of upset that he was playing in it or something. Which,
right.
Okay, so the players, that's where they get upset. But the actual overall message, I guess, has been, hey, you can gamble whenever you want as far as the outside public, because that's what they do with their advertising on their boards and on their ice. And I think I even saw Poker Stars on the ice once.
Well, I mean, you bring up an interesting point. This is the other thing that kind of drives me crazy about this is that the leagues go. I mean, I guess in an NFL state, I'm trying to think of an NFL state where I've seen a lot of casino advertising. I can't even think of one off the top of my head. So maybe yeah. That's a different story because that league is just so into it. But yeah, you go to any hockey game you watch on TV. It's not even Poker Stars. It's you know Mohegan Sun.
Yeah, baseball
like
too.
So,
baseball too. Yeah.
So they have no problem taking the money for advertising. It's
yeah.
just, you know, the when it goes a little too far is when they seem to have a problem, and that's a little hypocritical to some degree. Now, obviously, that those advertisements on the boards on the ice rink are from the team, not the league, so...
Right,
know, but,
right.
But yeah, it's an interesting dance that they do on what they allow, what they don't allow.
But now that they are allowing it, or at least now that this is obviously out in the open and everything, I mean, I think that you know, the more people that can see this sort of, whether it's on their website or eventually they're going to start having partypoker.com banners and stuff on graphics on TV or on the ice or whatever, the more people are going to be like, hey, Party Poker, that's back now? Poker's back now? And then it'll start, people with inquisitive minds will, you know, start to investigate or whatever in case they're not paying attention to the news or the poker movement. And anything that gets across, you know, non-poker lines is always a good thing, I think.
Yeah, and the other smaller thing that really has a little bit has very little to do with the teams, but I think is interesting to discuss is, you know, giving away game tickets and things like that. That's what I always thought was going to be really interesting about the U.S. regulated online poker market. And we're starting to see it in New Jersey, you know, because Ultimate Poker is, you know, owned by Station Casinos. So, you know, you have those tie-ins. I mean, if you own a hotel like that or a chain of hotels like that, and you've got empty room nights some night that are going to be gone unsold, why not put those as prizes, value-added prizes on your online poker site?
Right.
And you know, do the both. And, of course, Ultimate's even and more intertwined with UFC and you know, some special, you know, ringside passes and things like that. And that's the kind of stuff that I think that we didn't really see in the old world online poker, you know, the unregulated, the Poker Stars Full Tilt. I mean, they could go out and buy those kind of prizes and offer them or work out their own little partnerships. But it's much more seamless, I think, when it's all under the same ownership.
Yeah.
And so I think it's going to be interesting. I don't know how well the Devils draw, whether they have, you know, nights where they just don't draw well, and this is a way for people to get tickets pretty free and market the team and get more people out to the game. But that's a win-win if it is. And if not, again, like I said, I mean, they got some – you could have, you know, skate on the ice before the game or, you know,
Yeah. Visit
the team in the locker room. That kind of stuff that doesn't cost these teams anything but has a tremendous value to people. And you put that on a site, and it draws more people into play for it. And that, I think, is what's really going to blow this up if it takes off.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the value-added stuff that doesn't cost them anything that, you know, imagine that. You have a room that's just sitting there doesn't do anything, but, hey, we can get sort of free advertising and extra revenue out of it some other way. Let's give it away, you know, and it doesn't cost them anything anyway. The room's still there. It's just sitting there, so why not do it? Great stuff.
All right, well, this next item, you know, I know everybody in poker is talking about it, and I've never actually met this guy. I don't know if you have or not, but
yep. But
he's well-known. Of course, I think everybody that listens knows Hugh Jedi, Jay Newnham. Hugely popular poker photographer, personality, also a dealer. And he made an announcement finally this week that he's going to be stepping away from the game as he faces larceny charges over missing dealer toke money from Foxwoods. This has been going on for a week or so, I think. And obviously people have been whispering about it. And then the union rep posted something on the union's Facebook page and got obliterated with complaints from people thinking that he was, attacking this guy. So one of the statements, who Jedi was trying to avoid coming out because obviously he's facing charges. The smart thing is to be quiet, right?
Mm-hmm.
But finally came out this week and essentially said what he could say and told people, hey, back off this guy. You know, he's just doing what he's doing for the union. So, but But that's neither here nor there. Now the situation is just somebody that's so popular in the poker world, gone from the game now for who knows how long.
Yeah, the other thing he did too is I think he was one of those guys who set up the Twitter accounts and the social media stuff for a lot of the players and managed it and all that too. And that's going to be a pretty big void since social media is so prevalent, you know, in the poker world and stuff. I know he does a lot of that. I had met him a few times, actually, at least once or twice in Vegas. You know, we were out there for the series or one of our trips or whatever it was, hanging out in the media room, and he would be there and stuff. And then one time when I went to Foxwoods, I was meeting with the then tournament director, and we were talking about, you know, getting involved with Annie Up some more and doing some other things. And he brought up, the tournament director had brought up, hey, have you seen our live feed yet? And I'm like, no, you know, so, you know, the live stream. And I'm like, oh, that's cool, let's check it out. So it was Jay that was doing it, and he would take me through all of it. We went out to the tournament area and showed me the cameras and showed me how it was real time on his computer and all that. So he was really, you know, actually, too, Jay actually sent us photos, too, from when the November 9 that time played at Foxwoods in that tournament. There was a whole November 9 went back to the tournament.
Yeah.
He had taken all the shots and had some communication for them and stuff. So he does so much for poker, and I hope this turns out well. And I remember when I was there talking to the tournament director, Jay had walked right into the back office. So, I mean, they had given him access to, you know, to he's one of the Foxwoods people, you know, so I just hope that it works out okay, because he does so much for the poker, and would hate to see that something sour came out of all this.
Yeah, so folks can obviously all kinds of stories on the web if you want to read about exactly the charges. Obviously, he's just charged right now, so we'll
right.
let the process work out, yeah. and then we can discuss it once there's a resolution. So, but in happier news, Papes. You know, we still miss Apes, so I guess it's, you know, bittersweet happy news, right? But Papes has filled the void from Apes for a couple years now, and the new season's kicked off, and we got a phone call reminding us of it.
Evening, Andy. Yep, this is Mark Wittig from Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's negative 20 degrees out, so I figure I'd give you a call and maybe warm you guys up. I'm actually calling to thank John Somsky, a.k.a. Poker Geek MN, for running last year's Papes, and actually congratulate him on his victory. Hope all is well, and see everybody this year.
Definitely appreciate John and all his effort in putting
absolutely.
It together. You know, because I remember when I set up the actual Apes and came up with the whole on the sixes and planning out the whole thing, and I went through the whole schedule with you, and I could just tell you're like, you know, whatever, Scott. I can't believe you're wasting all this time putting this together, which is probably correct. So now we're happy that John's wasting all his time putting together this very complex schedule and managing the points and all that. And definitely encourage people to get involved. It's a loose New Year's resolution for me to get more involved. You know, it's tough when I travel as much as I can. But every night on the sixes. So if you're listening to it today, when we're recording here on the Thursday on the 16th, not our published date of January 17th, there will be an event tonight. So check it out and go to our forum at anyatmagazine.com/forum and get all the details on how you can sign up. And hopefully you'll see us occasionally throughout the year.
Yeah, I always feel like we need to explain what the hell Papes is. You just come out and say Papes.
I just blast right into doing it. Right?
Yeah. Well, when we started the series, it was the Annie Up Intercontinental Poker Series, and that was sort of an inside joke as well, because we were making fun of CBS Sports Spectacular when they had the Intercontinental poker series. We kind of couldn't figure out what the hell they meant by intercontinental. So the P, the first P when we say Papes, stands for play, as in play money. So that's what Papes is, and it's, even though it's play money, these guys take it seriously, and you won't find a better play money series out there, I'll tell you right now.
That's true, absolutely.
We got some exciting news, though, with our cruises and our Annie Up Poker Tour. Very good stuff. The 2014 Annie Up Poker Tour season kicks off with a one-tournament event at Cordova Casino near Sacramento, California. The buy-in is just $220, and the winner will appear on our March cover of Annie Up Magazine.
This is a phenomenal value for somebody that wants to be on the cover of a National Poker Magazine. Just $220 I mean, that's kind of one of our lead-up events at most of our Antioch Poker Tour events. So this is a casino. It looks very, very nice. I haven't had a chance to visit it yet, but I will obviously be out there for the event. But really a luxury lodge kind of look feel to it. Yeah. And they're trying to reinvent themselves in the poker world. And this is the way they wanted to do it, and we're happy to have them. So for folks that, $1,100 is too much for your bankroll to try to be on a cover, this is the tournament you want to come to. $220.
Absolutely. Of course, you can find all the details to this and all of our other stops at AntiochPokerTour.com. But we also have some new cruise giveaways, which is really cool. Grand Sierra Casino and Resort in Reno and MGM Grand in Las Vegas. So we had a couple of Nevada places kicking it in, and they're each going to give away five cruise packages to our LA cruise on March 30th, which goes to the Mexican Riviera. Of course, you can find all details about those things as well at AntiochCruises.com. We have so many websites now.
Yeah. Well, it's all one website. It's just all
one. Yeah, but they're redirects. We own those names. That's a good thing.
But I really like the way both of these casinos are doing. We don't have the exact details in Grand Sierra yet, but hopefully by the time most of you are listening to it, it will be up on our website. But that's going to be a straight tournament, which is always what most of our listeners ask for. They want to go and they're buying into a tournament that they can win a package. So in this case, you can win five. And it's going to be during the weekend that the Billiards Championship is in Reno, which is sometime in February, third week, I think, or so. So there's going to be a lot of there's always a lot of good poker play on that weekend, from what I understand. And then MGM Graham is giving it away. And this is the most interesting way I think I've ever seen any of our partners give away cruises. Every Sunday, you go in there from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., you get a flush or better, you get a ticket.
Yep.
At 10 p.m., the five people with the most tickets are called to the front of the room, and then they use that the Bravo random seat generator and pick two other players that are just sitting in the game.
Right.
And they come up as well, too. 10 envelopes. One of them includes a cruise package plus $900 in cash. The rest have various amounts of cash in it. And one player gets to take three envelopes. And another player gets to take two, and then everybody else gets to take one. That's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, that's cool, because if you've played long enough and you got enough tickets, you get increased odds of winning, but everyone else doesn't lose out on a chance of winning. You get randomly drawn, or you get the second or third most amount of tickets, you get a chance to win too. So it's pretty interesting. And they're going to do it every weekend in February. I think they're doing it twice during the Super Bowl. Is that correct?
Yeah, every Sunday in February, but on Super Bowl Sunday, two of the envelopes will have cruise packages.
Yes.
One.
So very
that's
cool.
The day you want to go.
Very cool stuff. Looking forward to that. And, of course, that's always going to help out our L.A. cruise. And don't forget, there's still time to go on our L.A. cruise, by the way. Go to AntiochCruises.com for more details on that. It's getting close.
All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emailed us at podcast@antiochmagazine.com. And if they haven't won anything from us in the past year, just like we do with Call of Florida Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is J Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Antioch. Check out J Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And I'll go ahead and let you read this because I know you're going to want me to answer this anyway.
This comes from Mike Light. He says, I live in Texas and I cry every night for the fact that poker is hidden in this state. I just recently moved back to Texas from Arizona. Why did you do that? While in Arizona, there were poker clubs within my town that had professional dealers in cash for cash and tournaments. They accomplished this by being a private club and not taking any rake. They basically earned from the players very similarly to OFCP method, renting the chair, I guess, is what he means by that. You have to explain.
Yeah, I think it's open-faced Chinese poker.
Okay, so renting the chair. Is this legal? If so, how different are the laws in Texas? I would love to take the time to start up a similar club here. I have done research, but it is so vague that I am not sure how much of a fight I would have.
All right, first answer. We are not lawyers. Do not listen to us and go do something, and when you get in trouble, say, hey, Scott and Chris told me to do this.
That's right.
Do not do that. Do not do that. this is what I would say, because we get these questions fairly regularly, and from all across the country, not just in Texas or anywhere else. So this is the path I would take. One, get a lawyer.
Right.
Because If the rest of what the advice I'm going to give you and the lawyer gives you goes south, you're going to need a lawyer anyhow. So it's better to get a lawyer right away and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing. Have the lawyer help, because the lawyer is a trained legal professional, correct?
Correct.
So they are much better at reading vague laws and giving you advice on what you can do, what you can't do, or if it is truly vague, what your chances are of having any trouble. That's the first step. All right, so I know you're saying, Scott, lawyers are expensive. I can't afford one. All right, well, you know, one will be provided for you if you get arrested. So, but I don't know if that one's going to be able to help you. So don't go get arrested. But if you just want to kind of explore without incurring, you know, the initial consultation fees from a lawyer, what I always suggest to folks is go directly to your local law enforcement agency, whether it's a sheriff's office or a police department, the person that the agency that you think will be shutting you down if you're doing something illegal. Go to them and be honest. Hey, set up an appointment. Say, hey, this is what I want to do. I don't want to violate any laws whatsoever. I don't want any trouble. If you tell me, hey, there's no way to do this, then I'm going to walk out of here and I'm going to buy a Subway franchise instead. But if you give me the parameters of which I can operate legally, I will abide by that and do it. Because here's the thing that I've seen in Florida, particularly, which is where Liam has my best experience with all this, is laws are vague in a lot of places. I mean, one person can read a law and another person can read it and see two completely separate things. In Florida, the big thing here is our sweepstakes laws. And we have these things called internet cafes, or at least we used to, and they're kind of all over the country now. But, you know, people come and play these, like, computer things that look like slot machines, right?
Yeah.
So you have one guy that reads the statute and say, hey, that's a slot machine. That's illegal. And you have another guy that reads the same exact laws and say, no, that's a sweepstakes, just like getting the little Monopoly pieces off of the McDonald's cup, right? So who's right? Well, it goes to court. That's the problem. But where your problem is your local law enforcement, that's the guy's interpretation who is going to be the biggest thing for you. Because here in Florida, we have one sheriff in one county that says these are slot machines and he's running around shutting them all down. If you're going to operate an internet cafe, you do not want to be in that county, because that guy's going to shut you down, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter whether it's legal or not, because you're going to have the big fight. Another county, the sheriff's office said, no, these are sweepstakes. I'm not going to shut them down. That's the county you want to be in. That doesn't mean that you're not going to eventually get shut down by the state or something, but my experience is it's a local law enforcement that's the bigger issue. And really, this whole issue, too, in Florida, it really gives me the red ass, because if you go on, and maybe it's been fixed now, but if you go on the state of Florida's website, there are two different state agencies that think they have purview over this, and each of them have a different legal opinion that is at odds with each other. Man. So that's where it gets really confusing. So, I mean, you can sit there and read statutes all day long, but at the end of the day, it's the guy, the boys of blue that are going to come and shut you down that I think you need to have on your side. So, but start with a lawyer. That's always the best thing. If you just want to poke around and find out whether it's even worth you getting a lawyer, then I would go start local, shop local.
Yeah. Could he also go to, like, the district attorney or, you know, whoever's in charge of the entire...
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, if I was going to do this, and this is not something I would ever do just because I think it's just so tough to do without drawing somebody's ire, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But if you are, I mean, obviously the more opinions you get, the better it is, particularly if you get to write an opinion in writing, that's always going to be helpful. I mean, the district attorney is going to be the guy that decides whether to prosecute you or not. So ultimately, that's a good guy to have on your side, an opinion. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to get arrested by the sheriff. You know, the sheriff doesn't always agree with the district attorney. District attorney doesn't always agree with the sheriff. So then just one more person to talk to if you want to be completely clear on it. You know, well, if it comes down to, I mean, if you're a gambler, you're a gambler. You know, I'm not a gambler. I wouldn't try to do anything that I think is going to get me in trouble. But if I was, I'm going to be sure I ask as many people as I possibly can and cover my bases. So that's what I would do.
All right, cool. See, I'm glad I didn't, because I would have just said, you know, I really don't know. All right, let's move on.
So I'm glad you answered it. That I really don't know, and I just turned that into a 20-minute bit.
You are a BS artist extraordinaire. All right, call the floor. You ever find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what their proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiantmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products, Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. It comes from Dan in Cincinnati. He says, I had the following situation come up recently at a daily tournament at my local casino. I accidentally revealed my cards while awkwardly folding preflop. This results in a three-hand penalty for a first-time offense. On my first penalized hand, the dealer dealt my cards to the middle of the table, preventing me from even touching them. On my second penalized hand, the dealer dealt my cards to me. Without looking at them, or even out of turn, I pushed them to the middle and said, I'm still on penalty, I shouldn't have received these. The dealer nodded and mucked my cards. The next hand, I received a hand again, but in a lapse of memory, I played them. I was short-stacked under the gun and shoved my nine big blinds with 5-5. There was one caller, and I lost a hand. I then remembered my penalty and felt awkward even bringing it up, as I knew the table would admonish me for only revealing this because I lost a hand. The dealer scolded me and said, then you shouldn't have played. The floor rule, the action stands, and I was out of the tournament. I don't really have an objection to the ruling, as I shouldn't be rewarded for playing cards to which I had no right. But it brings up two related questions. What if I would have won the hand? Is the hand null and void, or would my double up have stood? Whose fault is this situation? Are penalties expected to be self-policed, or should the dealer have not given me access to the cards in the first place?
All right, this is what Jody says. He says, TDA rule number 58, penalties and disqualification, states, quote, during a penalty, the offender must remain away from the table. The tournament director should have asked you to step away from the table. Since he did, the dealer should have called him back. That didn't happen, so one of the players at the table should have mentioned it. Bear in mind that per TDA rules, it's every player's responsibility to protect the other players. No one did this, and you had action. The action stands. If you had won, I would allow the action to stand and have you finish the penalty.
Makes pretty good sense to me.
Yeah, I can see some folks probably getting up at arms about this. But, you know, here's the thing. When our letter writer, Dan, first emailed me, the first thing I read through this, I'm like, what are you doing at the table?
Yeah, I was thinking
that. Not shouting at Dan, because I just can't imagine a poker room that uses penalties, which all of them should, because they're using TDA rules, that does it immediately tell you you cannot be at the table. I've never been in a room where somebody's been on a penalty and sitting at the table. That's just ridiculous to me that's allowed to happen. Because, you know, it's confusing, as in this case. I mean, the dealer, I mean, even a really good dealer, occasionally, if they see a person there, they're just by habit, right? Reflex.
Right.
Are going to flip cards to them. And so that's a reason not to do it. But the other reason, too, is you're on penalty. I don't think you should be allowed to observe the action at the table when you're on penalty. That's part of the penalty. It's not just that you can't get to play your hands. It's that you don't experience what the other people are experiencing for that round. Obviously, I'm not trying to punish Dan too much here. It's, you know, awkward thing. This is what happens. And most of the penalties I see are this, complete accidents. But that's the rule. I mean, and you should be away from the table. So every penalty I've actually never been on penalty yet. Unless you know what I am, I'll be very excited. Give me some bad boy cred. But every time I've seen somebody on penalty, they've been asked to step away, you know, within eyeshot or earshot of the dealer so they can let you know when it's time back in. But you are away from the table. And the fact that this didn't happen is just ridiculous. So, and you got action. So it goes back to the whole action. You know, I think we're talking about, you know, if you find some kind of mistake after the significant action, you know. In this case, the hand is completely played out. You got cards, you play, no one said anything. Yeah, the action stands. So this is all the more reason that if you're not on a penalty, but somebody else is on a penalty, and they're not told to leave the table, I think you need to speak up. You don't need to be rude about it. Just say, hey, he's on penalty, he shouldn't be at the table, correct? Voice the situation. Because what happens if you don't say that? You keep your mouth quiet, and the guy gets a hand, and he plays, and you've got kings. Turns out this guy gets aces, and you're knocked out, and he didn't say anything.
Yep.
Gonna hurt you, so just make sure everything is done correctly. Just, you know, remind folks, hey, you can't serve a penalty at the table,
right? And it falls on you to look out for everyone, and that's the same thing. If someone else gets knocked out and then he turns to you and he's like, God, I shouldn't even play, then he said, yeah, I knew that, you shouldn't have been there, but I didn't say anything, then he'd be mad at you. You're like, wait, what do you mean you didn't say anything? It's your job to remind everybody. So, you know, this everything played out the way it was supposed to play out, but you really shouldn't have been at the table. We get a brand new O'Malley's move. Let's see what happens this week.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a 2-5 No Limit Hold'em cash game. There are quite a few solid players at this table, with two inexperienced players and one maniac. It is worth noting that this is the only No Limit Hold'em game going in this small five-table room, which explains the inexperienced players. However, these two players seem to have some money, like to splash around, and both have bigger stacks than we do. They're both middle-aged and are there to gamble and have a good time. But they can be pushed off hands if the situation is right. It's folded around to us in the MP with 850. We're down about 150, and we look down at the Ace of Spades, Queen of Spades. Well, first in, with a decent starting hand and a solid image, we make it $20 to go. It's folded around to the hijack, who calls. Everyone else folds, except for the big blind. These are both the inexperienced players. There's $60 in the pot, and the flop comes down the Ace of Clubs, Seven of Clubs, Four of Hearts. The big blind leads out for a weak $5. We've seen him make this bet before, and it usually means weakness. We pop him to 50. The hijack calls, and after a bit of thought, so does the big blind. The turn is the Nine of Diamonds. With $210 in the pot, the big blind leads out again for a small $25. This is another interesting bet, which, again, feels very weak. Maybe he's trying to get a free river to hit a flush. We're not going to let him set the price, and we feel like we're ahead. We make it $150. Finally, the hijack folds. The big blind thinks for another short time before calling. There's 5-10 in the pot, and the river is the Four of Spades. The big blind contemplates his decision and finally makes a bet of $400. What's the move?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations. The podcast, antiantmagazine.com. This week's comes from Jimmy Fulton. And he's going to give us a little love first. So I know you like to keep these short and sweet, but I always like to get the love. So
get the love in.
He says, first, I love to state that I've been listening to your podcast for a little over a year. I really enjoy it. It's one of the reasons I have decided to pick up poker again. After online poker went away, I had, for the most part, stopped playing. And but now he's back playing, and he has a hand of the week for us.
Well, we are not responsible for anything that happens in your poker career, though. Don't come to us and say, your stupid show made me play, and I lost my whole bankroll, and I'm not taking any responsibility, nor any of the glory if you happen to win anything big. It's not because of us. We're just happy you're listening.
All right. He says, we're playing 1-2 no limit. And we are in middle position with pocket kings and a stack around $200, and there are two lippers in the pot, which on us.
Okay, we don't know anything about anybody, right?
I was like, boy, was that went on my Martin Lawrence here? Just by reading, you start laughing?
Well, I mean, we know nothing about anything. We don't know stack sizes about anybody.
Sometimes you don't.
Any player. So I'm going to take this as if I know nothing about any of the players, and it's the first hand I'm playing. And
everybody's got like those big hands, you know, so they're covering their chips and stuff. You know, I hate those people with big hands.
And the other thing too is that we don't know how much money other people have, so I don't.
That's
know.
What I'm saying, because they're covering their stuff.
Yeah, they're covering completely
hands.
Everything.
Big hands. I mean, they're like super huge hands, Chris.
They got their iPod in front of it and all their other crap, and I'm yelling at them at Binions. All right, so we got two limpers and a 1-2. Normally, I would make it without any limpers. You know, 10 to 15. So with limper and stuff, I might make it 15 or 20, something like that. Just, hey, you know what? I'm here to play, and I'm setting the tone. And I say the standard raise at this table when there's two limpers is about $18.
All right. Our hero says he raises to 12. Now, he says his standard raise had been 7, but with two limpers, I feel like I need to bet a little bit more. I hope I can protect my hand. I think I'm kind of more with you, 15-20. I think it's a little 12 seems a little light for me.
Yeah, I think everybody plays for 12, no matter what cards they have, as long as they're respectable.
Yeah, my experience is 1-2. I mean, usually the opening raise is usually 10 most places I play. I mean, you don't play that normal 6-3x thing that you do in tournaments just because it doesn't seem to work. So, but that's just the rooms I play in. I mean, your room has been, as you said, 7 here, then you throw a couple more bucks on there. I guess 12 is fine. But I would think at this point, if those two limpers are probably going to come along for that 12, and that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, I think you need to make it a little more expensive so speculative hands. So, you know, it's just not worth it for one flop. So I don't agree with the 12, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I want to play it heads up. And, you know, even if I raise too much, I don't want to be crazy, raise 40 or something. But, you know, I pick up two limpers, that's $6, $7 right there, you know.
Yeah.
It's not what I want for the Kings, but I'd rather do that than have seven callers in this hand and not know how to play and just have to set mine with Kings. That's worse, I think.
Yeah.
All right. It says it folds around to the big blind, and he's the only one that called. So that's what I know. You know, his limpers said, hey, forget it. $12, woo!
Sounds like a tight game.
What, are we in Vegas? No, I can't play that.
Sounds like a tight game.
Yeah, so that changes everything for me, too. If that's, you know, a $12 raise, if the couple of limpers is going to get respect, then absolutely no reason to commit more than you have to, right?
Right.
This is really all I wanted. It was just a heads up and in position, too. So I think this is the best thing you can ask for the Kings.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, so you can take a little bit of your laughter back because now we're going to get a little bit more information.
Okay? Excellent.
He says, the big blind has been at the table roughly 30 minutes. And this is the first raise I have seen him call. That's all you got.
Okay. That's still good, though. Get the impression that he's tight or that he's been card dead. So he could be either really desperate to finally play a hand that looks good, or he could actually have a hand.
Okay, so the flop is 8-8 deuce rainbow and a big blind checks.
Okay. Well, there's about 25 or so in the pot. It's pretty dry board. So I don't want to totally scare him off. I'd like to get some money, make it look like we're just doing a continuation bet with Ace-King or something.
Sure.
So, I don't know, maybe $12?
Yeah, see, it's what? It's
about 25 or so.
24 plus the limper, so about $30 in the pot, right?
Yeah, I take rate out. Right. Yeah, so I'd say about 25, 26 in the pot. So I'd say about 12 or 13, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you bet 12 already the first time, so it's just a kind of a standard same bet kind of thing, you know, maybe 15 just because throw three red chips out and not have to get rid of my whites because my whites make my stack look really big, you know.
Talk about appearances with you.
Yes, exactly. It's a little bit more valuable than that dollar that's listed on it. So, all right. So, our hero decides to bet 25. So he goes bold, big pot size bet here.
Yeah. I mean, this, I don't really think that's too terribly wrong. I mean, I don't, everything is relative. So, you know, if he felt like, you know, this guy couldn't possibly have hit, or maybe he has a smaller pair and might think that his hand is good if he has, like, sixes or nines or something like that and might think this is a good flop for that, you know, he could just be looking to check raises or something. So I don't mind a $25 bet, but I just feel like standard ABC poker probably applies here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the flip side is where I can defend a 25 is that I really don't think this flop hit this guy. I mean, if he has an 8, he has an 8, you know. If he has pocket deuces, he has pocket deuces. But other than that, I don't see him really hitting this. And I don't think he thinks that we hit this. So, you know, unless he put us on a pocket pair. So, if we bet a little bit more, we're probably going to get action here. And I do want action. I want another bet out of this guy. I mean, obviously, if he's got me beat, then I don't. But I'm not going to... You can't play scared here. That's big. So... Yeah. So that's where I think maybe because of the texture of the board that I think you can get away with a higher continuation bet because somebody's going to say, you know what, I don't believe you. You're betting so much. You're betting more than you should because you think I missed it too, and you know what? I'm gonna keep you honest.
Yeah, the scary thing, the other way to think about it too is, you know, if somebody's got like ace-queen and you're trying to keep them from hitting that ace in the turn, you know, or whatever, which is a bad way to think of it, but I'm just... It's another reason to defend that kind of a bet, albeit a small reason. So,
right.
You know, but I still think I would bet about 15 or so here.
Okay. Like I said, our hero bet 25, and the big blind raises to 50.
Yeah, I think if he had an 8, there'd be no reason to raise here. This board is so dry.
Yeah.
And what's he worried about, a 2-outer on us on the turn? You know, I mean... Really, if he had a full house, he would totally just let us bet, right?
Isn't this why poker's so awesome? This is why poker's so awesome. If I had an 8 here, because I would do it just because of that.
Yeah, but you're running the risk of losing a guy with ace king.
You run the risk, but I mean, you know, you're right. It depends on the player. If I think the player's an analytical player, which is what we're doing right now, we're analyzing this hand, right?
Yeah.
Then that's kind of a way to play against it. But yeah, in general, you're right. In general, I think most players are going to raise here. I think it probably goes back to what I was talking before. He doesn't think this 8-8 deuce hit, you connected with this. a raise will find out whether you have a pocket pair. If you have a pocket pair, you're probably going to call a raise, and then he knows what he's doing, and he's kind of taken being out of position and to the degree it can make it worth it for him, right?
Yeah, here's the other thing, too, is when this hand started, I said, I'm going to treat it like I don't know anything about anybody, and I'm playing it pretty straightforward. So in my mind, a guy who raises there wouldn't have an eight at this situation because I don't know anything about these players, and I have to play them how traditionally it would be played. If somebody had an eight or a deuce-deuce there, they wouldn't raise us, I think, unless they were convinced we had a hand that was huge and that we'd get paid off. So I don't think they know anything about us. He's only been there half an hour. We didn't know anything about him. We said he was pretty tight, so he could easily have something like tens or jacks or something like that because he played queens. He played the hand, so he hasn't played a hand in 30 minutes, and he didn't re-raise because he's cautious. He's a cautious player, so it could be that he just has a pair that's higher than the eights. So I think I'm going to re-raise. I'm going to raise again here. I'm not going to just call.
You might even do it with a pair lower than eights, too.
That's true, too.
If he thinks we have ace-king or something here,
exactly.
Let's make it expensive for you to continue. You know, if I got sevens or sixes or something, sure, why not, right?
Yep, I think I might make it even more. I might make something like, let's see, he made it 50, so I don't know. I might make it like 125 now. I mean, the other thing, too, is that I only have 200, so if I put 50 out there, I only have 150 left, plus the initial raise. So, you know, I mean,
We don't know what this guy has. We don't know what his stuff kind of depends. You're right. You know,
so it's tough to know what he has in his deck, what I would bet. But if he had me covered, I might just shove here, believe it or not. I might. I don't think I would, but it seems weird to just call here when I don't believe him. If I'm playing him the way I said I was going to play, just sat down, knew nothing about him, I couldn't put him on an eight or a deuce there, or a pocket deuces there. I would put him on something like nines or tens or even sevens or something. So I'm going to raise him again. Maybe I'll min-raise to make it 100. Well, a min-raise.
Yeah, because if he shoves on you at that point, then you know he's not playing with you, right?
Yeah, but probably. You can't fold, really. I mean, I guess you could fold, but you'd have 100 and... You know, 125 invested out of 200. You only have 75 left anyway, or whatever. So,
you know, the other thing about this hand too is we're not dead here, right?
Right.
There's no way we're dead right now. So, I mean, we could be drawing thin, but you know, a king will beat any hand that
except pocket eights. But you still have runner king to win. So you never know.
Yeah, if he's raising a pocket eights here, then that you know more power to him.
Yeah, that's insane.
Interesting. Okay.
So I think I re-raise again. I don't think I just call there. I feel like if I just call and then an ace comes on a turn or some sort of, I don't know what a scare card could be here, but if he then shoves on me, now I'm put to the test. So I feel like I need to re-raise again.
Yeah, I'm trying to make a case for calling. I mean, if you call, I think you have to know what you're going to do after that. Because if you call, it's like trying to get one more street for $25. And see what he does, you know. You can't assume that he's going to check the turn, right?
Right.
Which would be awesome. You got to assume he's going to bet. If you just call here, then the pot's going to be 100 at that point, so you're committed at that point. I guess if you want to call here, you give yourself an option to fold if an ace comes or something. But an ace doesn't make sense for his holdings here, I don't think.
Yeah, not now. I just can't. I feel like I'm still ahead, and why give him another free card to try to make a full house or something with his pocket sevens or something? So,
right.
I think I am gonna raise. So, I don't know, 120, 125, maybe a shove. Who knows?
Sure. All right. Well, Harris says I don't believe he has an eight, though. Although it's possible. This being the first hand I have seen him call with, my initial read was a pocket pair, ace king, ace queen, etc. We decided to call, hoping he is going to bet out again on the turn. Don't really follow the logic there.
Yeah, I think he thinks he's bluffing at it, and so he wants to let him bluff at it.
But
I don't.
Let him hang himself.
Yeah, but I don't. That's a really fine line to take there.
But here's the thing: if you call, then it kind of takes away the bluff, doesn't it? And he's gonna have to be really stone cold to fire again at you if you just call.
Yeah.
Won't he?
Yeah. Plus, this guy you said for 30 minutes I've been playing a hand. He's so cautious. Now all of a sudden he's pulling off a huge bluff, which is fine if he knows you're that astute. But how does he know that about you? You've only been playing for 30 minutes. You know, I don't know if he can pull off a bluff here. So I don't call at all. I don't think calling's a good idea.
Yeah. All right. Well, the turn is an offsuit tray, so the board now is 8-8 tray deuce. Actually, 8-8 deuce tray. Sorry. And our opponent bets 50.
Yeah, I mean, for me to call 50 with only like 100 in my stack, let's see, 50 from the stack, and then the bet was pre-flop was
62, and we had what we started. So we have 138.
Yeah, so almost 50% of our stack just on a call, and we still feel like we're way ahead. I just can't do it. I would have raised earlier, so it's tough to do this now, but I probably would have shoved in the situation. I can't just call again. And then what? An ace comes on the river and he bets 75, and then what do you do? So, you know, I think we need to just shove.
Yeah, I think it's.
Because if you re-raise, you normally would re-raise to 150 anyway. And there's a re-raise here is not a bad play.
So because folding is just terrible, I think, here, because there's so many hands we have beat.
Yeah, because why would you fold now?
And calling, you're just... What are you going to... You try to get... I mean, this is what kind of goes against what I think people... How I play. I'm not giving myself an option to fold here at this point. I mean, there's just so much money in there that... You know, I guess maybe if an ace comes, but I really... The ace doesn't make sense to me. I know our hero thinks that an ace is in his range, but it doesn't make sense to me here, so I'm not even worried about an ace coming. To be honest, I don't know what a bad card is on the river. I mean, because I think most likely he has some sort of pair here. So any card that comes could be the card he needs to catch up to me, right?
Yeah. I mean, really, think about, for a minute, folding. What does that 3 represent that you now need to fold because he happened to bet the same amount he bet on the last street when you called him? There's nothing has changed on this board for you to think that you're behind. You called because you thought you were ahead on the flop.
Exactly.
What makes you think you're behind now? So I would just shove here.
Okay. Our hero says when our opponent bet $50, this is what I want him to do. I wasn't sure if I should just shove now or let him bet into me again. I decided to just call.
Another call. I don't like the call.
Well, here's the thing. I'll defend the call because he believes firmly that he's ahead and he's trying to get more money out of him. To me, I can't defend the call if you're going to call and then consider folding on the river.
Yeah.
I don't get the impression from our hero here that he has any intentions of folding. I think he's going to, if the guy bets on the river, no matter what the card comes, he's going to at least call, if not raise him on the river. And that's fine, I guess, at that point. Because really, at this point, if you feel strongly that you're ahead, which our hero does, and I feel pretty good that we are ahead too, now the goal is just to try to get your player stack, right? So if we decide a call is the best way to do it, I can defend that. But I can't defend a call if you're uneasy and you're thinking about folding.
Yeah, I mean, he's walking the dog here. And that's fine. Because in his mind, he's convinced that the guy is either has a weaker hand or is bluffing. So he's just letting him do his betting for him. And then on the river, if he doesn't bet, then we can bet into him and hopefully value bet or something. Now, I can see that line of thinking. But you don't have that much money left anyway. So, this player probably knows that. And he knows that you can't fold. No matter what he bets. So why is he still betting? He must be betting because he thinks he has a better hand than you, and maybe he does. I don't know. But I really don't know what to think anymore. That, I don't like the call, to be honest. I can see why he's doing it, but I don't like it. I would have gotten it in earlier and made this guy make a decision. But at the end, it may be that, we're getting more money out of him this way than we would have had we'd done it my way. So
maybe
he's smarter than I am. I don't know.
All right, well, the river is a deuce, so the final board is 8-8, deuce, tray, deuce. And our opponent bets 50 again. And we have roughly 85. Squiggly, folks. Although he sent this before the New Year, so.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could just throw that 35 in there with it. At this point, you might as well just call.
Who knows? I mean,
he could have aces. You know what I mean? The guy could have aces. That's the one hand I didn't think about, but.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, really, he could have a lot of things. I mean, he could be playing a non-standard way, at this point. I mean, at this point, what I got to decide is whether the value of putting the 35 in that the guy will probably call regardless of anything and getting that extra $35 out of him is worth being wrong and not having that $35 in front of my stack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just on top of my head, I just think I would rather save that 35 in case because I really don't know where I am at this point now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, the only hand that I feel like beats us is really ace-ace here. Because if he had an eight, I don't think he would have played it this way. I certainly don't think he had a deuce in his hand. What, for a guy who doesn't play for 30 minutes, what deuce does he have in his hand other than pocket deuces? And again, I don't think he would have played it that way. So I don't think he has a boat that way. Pocket threes, maybe. Maybe he played pocket threes this way. But even the turn bet now with full house made, maybe is kind of, I don't know if he would have played it that way either. So it's a tough hand. I just call. I'll just call now that we're in this hole.
Okay. Let's see. He says, this bet puzzled me. I had only roughly 85 in front of me. If he had an 8 or a deuce, wouldn't he just put me all in here? He could have an overpair to the board. I decided to call, thinking it was more likely he had an overpair to the board, and he tables 10-10.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we probably lost at $35 of value, which we probably would have got called. But, you know, again, on balance, I think maybe I'm too passive with that. But
no, I don't disagree with you. I think the call is fine. I mean, again, it's $35 that you can save if you're wrong, and it's a big enough pot that you know what I mean? I realize you want to maximize it. And again, we talked about if you weren't behind before, you're probably not behind now, but at the end there, it's only $35. Yeah, you could. I can go either way on it, but I don't really have a problem with just calling there. Like you said, that's 35. It's in my stack if he has ace-ace or some weird eight. But I think all along, you and I pretty much knew this guy, his hand was pretty much face-up, that it was 10-10 or 9-9 or jack-jack or something like that. A hand that's not really, really re-raisable pre-flop unless you're real aggressive and you know that the other guy is just making a play. So 10-10 seems like a normal calling hand there to see the flop, and it felt exactly like that, and that's what it was the whole way through. So again, I don't mind the call on the end, though.
Yeah, his last couple questions here I think we answered pretty well already, but he says, afterwards, the opponent asked me, had he put me all in, would I have folded? He said, in all honesty, I'm not really sure, but if it was an all-in bet, would you guys have given him a credit for an 8? And I don't think so at all.
Well, at what point is he asking that? Is he on the river put them all in? Because it's only $35. There's no way.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, that's the thing at that point. I mean, we're already talking about, you know, whether we say that 35 or not. But, you know, if he had bet 85, there'd be no question that I'm calling.
Yeah, I don't think there's any point in this hand that I would have folded to an all-in bet. Pre-flop, I would have called. After that flop, I would have called. Like, if he had check raised this all-in, I would have called. Turn, I would have called because nothing changes. And river, really, how did that deuce help him? There's no way he has a deuce in his hand while he played it, so I don't think there's any street where I would have folded to an all-in bet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Plus, I have no respect for money, so $200 is nothing to me.
But I think this is an interesting hand in the sense that this guy just didn't put us on a big pair, right?
Right.
He did. As we said from the beginning, he probably thought we were on ace-king or ace-queen, and we didn't hit the flop, and you know, he kept firing. I think he fired too small here. I think he really could have put us to a test at some point. I'm not sure whether we would have folded or not, but in a lot of ways, I feel like he kind of got cooler somewhat there.
The question I wonder now, too, is would that opponent have called us had we shoved earlier in the hand, or would he have folded the 10-10? And we probably ended up getting more money out of this guy because we played it the way Jimmy played it, really.
Yeah.
Because if we had shoved, he might have said, all right, you must have an overpair to my tens and folded.
I think that's very valid because yeah. I think, I mean, obviously he bet small all the way through, right?
Yeah.
And it's tough to say, but it kind of seems like he was thinking, you know, like he was trying to reverse walk the dog us, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I'm just going to bet enough to keep this guy in this hand. I know he's got ace, king, ace, queen. And, you know, if one of those comes, then I know I'm in trouble. But if the board keeps rolling out low, I'm just going to keep bleeding them dry. And that's probably why he was betting so low.
Yeah, and this guy, this opponent had to know he had something, though. Why would we keep calling $50? $50 to hit a six-outer with ace-king? I don't think so. He should have put us on something, which is why it's weird that he bet on the river.
Well, yeah, I'm looking back at this. Remember back at the flop when we talked about when he did the min-raise, which I think I talked to him just trying to find out whether we had that ace-king or ace-queen, and we probably wouldn't stick around if we did. And we just called.
Yeah.
Rather than raising, which I think he would thought we would have done if we had jacks, queens, kings, aces, right?
Yeah.
So I think at that point, even though Jimmy didn't play the way that we would have, I think he put that down in his mind that let him then on the turn say, all right, It's a tray now. He's got ace, king, ace, queen. I don't want to scare him off this hand. I want to keep bleeding him. I'll bet 50 again. And then he called. Okay, well, that must be what he has. And then the river comes. I'm like, all right, great. Now that's a beautiful card on the river if you think somebody, your opponent has ace, king, or ace, queen, because, you know, you got two pair with the ace now, right?
Yeah.
And, all right, well, I don't want to shove here. I don't want him to think, oh, my gosh, I'm going to go home broke if I make this call, which is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So let's bet 50 and at least get 50 out of the guy. And, so, I don't know. I really don't, at this point, I don't think I really fault. And the guy was responding to, I think, the way Jimmy was playing it, which was differently than we played it, so.
Just seems to me that once that turn bet is called for 50, it can't be ace, king, or ace, queen anymore. And at that point, you have to put him on a very specific,
I don't know.
Nine,
again, we're
nine.
Playing 1-2, right? You know, I think because we talk about 1-2 a lot on this show, I think, it's the game that most of us play, but, you know, the real scheme of things, I mean, the 1-2 player is a wide tuna net, isn't it?
Yeah. I just, it just seems, you know, $50 to win at that point was, what, 150? 3-1 in your mind to hit a 6-outer in their minds that you're trying to hit a 6-outer to beat them.
Yeah.
Seems to me like he's putting you on a very specific 9-9, 7-7 type hand. That, you know, you can only beat a bluff at the end there. And the value bet is you know you're not going to fold when there's only 85 in front of him and you're betting 50. He's not going to fold for 50 now unless he has ace-king. And even then, like you said, now he's got two pair with an ace-kicker. He's probably not going to fold for 50 anyway, so why bet? You know, it's interesting that he bet again.
Well, it goes back to his final question. Obviously, he was curious, you know,
yeah.
Hey, and I put you all in when you have folded. And, you know, it looks like he could have – it might have worked. Against Jimmy, you know.
Jeez.
So, interesting.
All right. Well, Jimmy, nice job getting the most out of that hand. I don't think I would have gotten as much as you did, so congrats. Don't forget to send your hands to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.